on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Thursday, November 6, 2025 edition, and we are moving quickly through the fourth quarter and quickly approaching the holiday season. But before we get there, we are experiencing some market volatility. And if you've seen my recent market analysis videos over on our YouTube channel, well, you'll know that this recent volatility should not be a surprise to you. Now, I'm Justin Klein, and my objective here is to give you data and perspective so that you can make better decisions with your money, but also mainly answering your finance and investment questions. Whatever's on your mind, we encourage you to call 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278 is how you get through and ask your question on today's show, or really any show. You can leave a message after hours and we'll get to it on a future episode. So that's what this hour is about, furthering your financial education, clarifying what needs to be clarified. So in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics. But as usual, we'll tackle this first caller question now. Oh, never mind. We're going to a live call. Jarek in Halifax, Canada, looking at VOLT. How are you doing, Jarek?
Hi, Justin. How are you doing?
Doing pretty well. Thanks for giving us a call. What can you tell me about VOLT?
It's a TEMA electrification ETF.
Okay.
My understanding is that they're quite involved in the build-out of data centers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know you talk about the AI bubble, mm-hmm. and I'm not invested in like Google and some of these other companies that are paying mm-hmm. to make these, but looking to kind of capitalize on maybe like a pick and shovel type play. And mm-hmm. is this pick and shovel type play enough? I've also got some like copper positions and things like that, but mm-hmm. Looking to see maybe there's some of these companies in this holding here that are mm-hmm. going to stand to benefit. It looks pretty expensive right now, but I'm just wondering if it is pick and shovel enough, and what would be a good price.
Yeah. So here's the thing. This is an ETF, right? So you're getting a bunch of different names. It has names like Powell mm-hmm. Industries, NextEra Energy, Bell Fuse Incorporated, Qantas Services, Amphenol, Hubble, Energy Transfer, etc. So what I will say is I like a lot of these type of companies. In fact, two of the top 10 names we actually hold for clients. So I like some of the names. You're not getting a lot of names, about 29 total holdings, actually 28, 45% industrials, 15% technology, and 34% utilities. What do I like about it? I like the picks and shovels. I like what you're talking about. The issue is that by and large, I don't like these thematic ETFs, especially in times when, you know, people are excited about the space. And so a lot of these names are overvalued. And if I look in the top 10, only three of these 10 are fairly valued or undervalued. The rest are overvalued. Okay. And that's the issue. And so I would be very patient on this. I would use this as a buy list, right? Download the 28 names. You can go on their prospectus and do your own research and find the ones that make sense for you and that are reasonably priced. So I like what you're looking at in this space. I just think that from a thematic perspective, timing isn't great. I probably want a little bit of the froth to come off the market. In fact, some of the names that we hold within this ETF, we've actually trimmed recently because of valuation concerns. So timing-wise is not good, I think we are probably getting a pullback in markets between now and, say, January. And maybe that's a better time in the new year. But also, I would be looking at the individual names within it as opposed to just buying this whole ETF outright.
Okay, great. Thanks for taking my call. Always no appreciate problem. It.
Thanks for making it. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes. And here's some what we have planned, time permitting. And our main focus point is gold's enduring role from ancient coins to the Bitcoin era. From gold standard to the modern Bitcoin comparisons, we'll explore why gold still matters in this digital age and how it might fit into your portfolio. In addition, we have other topics on the docket. One is in regards to the way analysts talk about management and how they, you know, are their recommendations, do they hold any water? Okay, look at that. And then housing affordability. Is it going to get cheap anytime soon? We'll look at that. And then if we have time, we'll look at the recent historic outperformance of foreign equities to domestic stocks. So we'll look at that as well. So that's what's on the docket for me today. But also, it's going to be about you and what's on your mind. And we have voice bank calls to answer. One is on Avena Healthcare. The other is on publicly traded sports teams. And then we have questions that came in via the Invest Talk YouTube channel as well. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions right now. We're moving into a break, still to come. My focus point, more answers to your questions. So I encourage you to call right now on Invest Talk at 888-99-SHARP.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
What do you think's a good price?
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
And I was wondering, from your standpoint, is there a downside in buying fractional shares versus whole shares?
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
But technically, right now, I like it. I like the momentum. But once again, I don't like those fundamentals.
Now, while gold is hitting these record highs, it's driven by the safe haven demand, by central bank buying across the board.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
Calling to ask about Core in Maine.
This is Josh in North Carolina.
This is Marlo from New York City area.
Let's go take a live call. Sam from San Jose.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk.
Great insights. Thank you.
888-99-CHART.
This year, give a gift that goes far beyond the moment, an Invest 529 account. Whether it's a child, grandchild, or someone just starting out, you're helping them save for education that could open doors for a lifetime. Invest 529 is a tax-advantaged way to save for college, trade school, or even apprenticeship programs. It's flexible, easy to start, and you can contribute any amount, big or small. You can even invite your friends and family to join in, making it a meaningful group gift. Each contribution helps build a brighter future, one deposit at a time. And because the money can grow tax-free, it's a gift that really builds value over time. So instead of giving something that gets used up or set aside, give the gift that can change a life. Start an Invest 529 account today. Go to invest529.com to get started.
Justin Klein is here, and he's ready with answers to your finance and investment questions. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go take a look at the market today. As I said at the top of the show, that we had continuation to the downside, especially in the AI names. And there were a lot of signs of this that I've spoken about both here on the show as well as my YouTube channel, that liquidity in the markets are getting tighter or is getting tighter. And you've seen that in the credit markets and SOFRs, we call SOFR spreads, which I explained once again on my YouTube channel, are starting to widen out. It shows there's less liquidity, less reserves in the system than needed. It's one of the reasons why the Fed is ending QT at the end of this month, quantitative tightening. So that means they're no longer reducing their balance sheet by the end of this month. But a lot can happen between now and the end of the month as well. And you're already starting to see that. And positioning is offsides. Too many people are crowded into equities, especially Mag 7 names and AI names and tech names. And you're starting to see that come undone in a fairly material way today. You had, if you take a look at how the markets were segmented today, you had certainly the growth side struggled the most. Large cap growth down 2.2%, whereas large cap value was only down 0.07% on the day. And you see that with the S&P down 1.1%, NASDAQ was down nearly 2%, the Dow down 0.8% overall. And the broad Morningstar U.S. market down 1.14%. But the global markets, interesting, only down about 0.5%. So you see, continue to see those foreign markets outperform because they're less crowded names and much better values. Today, you had the likes of NVIDIA down 3.6%, Palantir down 7%, Tesla down 3.5%, Amazon 2.8%, Meta down 2.6%, AMD down 7%, Apple hung in there, was roughly flat, same with Google. And really the only strength, whereas some of the big banks, Bank of America and JP Morgan, were up. You did have Eli Lilly up on the back of a deal coming out of the White House around GLP-1 drugs. But the rest of the market was kind of a mixed bag to slightly negative. But that's really where this is a very top-heavy market. If you're not seeing continued expansion and growth of those Mag 7 names, then the whole market is going to fall. And that's kind of what you're starting to see. And this can certainly snowball on itself if we break certain levels. And frankly, that's going to be right now. Let me pull up the S&P. I have the SPY up. So the cash index that was today, we closed right around 668 or so on the 50-day moving average. And the market closed at 6720. So a little bit more downside to go before you get some support. And frankly, I think this heads to about 6,500 on the S&P and would not shock me if we get all the way down to the 200, which is closer to 6,200 on the S&P before this market pullback finds some solid footing. So I think we're on the precipice of that much needed sentiment refresh in markets and try to get those people that are offsides back on sides. Okay. Now on the economic front, challenger job cuts jumped over 150,000 in October, nearly double the prior month and triple year over year, the year over year number. So from October of last year. Now year to date job cuts have exceeded 1 million. That's up 65% from the year earlier period for the same, January through October. And it's up 44% from all of 2024 and the most since the pandemic. So as much as you want to talk about kind of the week-to-week monthly jobs numbers, the total labor picture for this year is certainly poor and deteriorating. And year-to-date announced planned hires have totaled just 488,000. That's down 35% from a year earlier, same period. And the lowest year-to-date total since 2011. So the labor market continues to soften. And I think that could be part of the trigger for the market coming down. But mainly, I think it has to do with the lack of liquidity in the system. Treasuries were a bit stronger, yields down about 7-8 basis points across the curve. And that was on just the fact that the labor statistics and economic statistics continue to deteriorate that will probably pressure the Fed to cut as we head into 2026. The dollar index is down 0.5% on the back of the same factors. Then gold finished a little changed, so flat. Bitcoin futures were down, though, 2.9% and right hovering at that 100,000 mark. I've talked about that for a little while. That 100,000 is a big, big, big support level for Bitcoin. And it's been chopping there for the last couple of days, about 48 hours or so. And so We'll see if that breaks. And I think that would be a big tell to a much broader pullback in markets. So that was the market today as we head into the final trading day of the week tomorrow. Now let's play another listener question now.
Hi there. This is Sam from the west side of LA. Gentlemen, I want to thank you for everything that you do. And my question is about AirJoule Technologies, ticker AIRJ, possibly as an AI-related play. Notice they were down 4% today, so I picked up a little bit. They have an interesting technology that could be a solution to some of our problems. So would love to know what you think. AIRJ, AirJoule. Thank you. Bye.
Okay, AirJoule, interesting. Operates as a thermal energy and water harvesting technology company. Provides efficient and sustainable air conditioning and pure water from air through its transformational AirJoule technology. Okay, so from the sounds of it, as a concept, this could have AI applications and cooling data centers and all of that. I don't know anything about the technology. I will say that. However, you know, they don't make money. The technicals are horrendous. Relative strength is 29. And I don't see anything technically that tells me this is going to turn around. But if you believe in the technology, they don't have any revenue, right? So to me, it's all pie in the sky until they actually start bringing in money. Until then, it's just a dream. If we're heading to break, give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
The official numbers are in. Now with 62 million downloads, InvestTalk. Listen live or download the free podcast. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART.
We're going to head to Santa Clarita, California, and talk with Richard looking at Honeywell, H-O-N.
Yes. Hi, Justin. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
First of all, how much do you think the industrial sector should be in a portfolio now? You know, is it one that should be kind of emphasized at this point? And the industrial I was looking at, Honeywell, is it a good buy at this point? It has come down and over, you know, year a bit. I know it's a good company, you know, huge company. But what are your thoughts on that?
Well, Honeywell is certainly a solid legacy business, and they provide automotive and aerospace products, security technology, specialty chemicals, engines, etc. So, you know, diversified industrial business. And you like that. You like that diversity, the consistency, the return equity is 34%. You like that. Their balance sheet's very strong. Their cash flow at about $6 billion on a $124 billion market cap. About a 4% free cash flow yield. Not amazing, but not terrible either. And the chart is in a longer term uptrend, but it's a pretty sloppy one, to be honest with you. So I like the business. And it has some ancillary connections to AI infrastructure buildouts. But it remains a slow growth business. Last quarter, revenue was up 7%. Earnings were up 9%. This fourth quarter, earnings are expected to be up 7% and revenue up 2%. So, you know, it's a big name. It's hard for it to grow considerably. This is more of a consistent dividend grower. It certainly can afford to pay that dividend, and it continues to increase that dividend. In fact, it recently increased its dividend from $1.06 to $1.19. You certainly like to see that. So this is one of those steady industrial growth names. It's not going to go gangbusters, probably not going to go up 30-40% in any given year, but it's going to be steady and consistent. If that's what you're looking for, then I like Honeywell. How much should you have in your portfolio of industrials in general? Definitely double digits, at least 10%. I would go as high as 20. It depends on your risk, depends on how comfortable you are with cyclicality. A lot of industrial names are exposed to the economic cycle. So you have to understand that. And also depends on what index you're trying to really track. What are you trying to look like? More like the S&P, the World Index, a value index, et cetera. So there are a lot of factors that go into that exact number, but definitely want it at least about 10% of your total equity slice.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
No problem, Richard. Thank you for the call. Let's talk a little bit about gold. And I always like to step back, especially in times like these, where a certain asset class had a good run. At any time, anything has a good run in it. You want to ask, is this hype or is there something real here? And the recent run makes gold as an investment alternative something to consider for everybody. And under normal circumstances, over the past 30 years or so, gold is considered to be stable, it's a safe haven, preserves wealth, and it doesn't tend to swing wildly until recently. So what is the increased volatility telling us? Now, in many ways, it's acting a lot like Bitcoin, at least when it comes to that volatility, right? Now, gold's certainly outperforming Bitcoin. And the question is, should they be treated the same or are they different? And I would argue they're very different. One is a real asset. You can touch it. You can feel it. Unfortunately, with all that has gone into cryptocurrencies, the technology about around blockchain, which I think is useful in many applications, unfortunately, the space by and large has been hijacked by speculative fervor, even if the ethos of it is accurate. But the ethos of Bitcoin can be just as equally applied to gold. The idea is to get around the traditional financial system that has grown over the last few decades and into something that has stability, that is outside of that, in many ways, corrupted system. And so after the break, I'm going to get into the history of gold and why gold should have a place in everyone's portfolio because of that history that is immutable. We'll dig into that. But on the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this topic for critical minerals, critical moments, rare earth stocks set to surge. We'll do a deep dive into how the global scramble for rare earth and battery metals are igniting a stock boom and what investors need to know. That story is for tomorrow, but for now, give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
The calls are free, the unbiased answers are free. So what are you waiting for? Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, before the break, I was speaking about gold and Bitcoin and how both have, over the last number of years, had some pretty nice runs. Now, gold is starting to outperform, and the question is why, and is that sustainable? And the ethos of why both are rallying, I think, is similar in many ways, but they do have some differences. And I want to go and dig deeper in gold. And what you have to remember is gold has actually been used as coinage as far back as the 8th century in Asia Minor. And why is that? Well, gold has rare qualities. It doesn't corrode. So you can store it for long periods of time and it stays as it is. It's not going to rot away. And it was a symbol of immortality and power in many ancient cultures. So it was the ideal material to store wealth. Now, gold has often been seen as too valuable, though, for practical everyday use. You use it for transactions, right? And then you had the invention of the paper money. That was, you know, once you had the printing press, you had paper money, and gold was more of what we call base money. And you still have that today. You have the base money, those are reserves in the banking system. Then you have the broad money, which is the money that's lent out from the system. The history also shows that in certain times, especially World War I, was the first widely recognized abandonment of the gold standard. in 1914. Now, for generations, the gold standard has been thought of as sound money and is viewed as unthinkable to do that. But in 1933, it was fully removed by Franklin Delano Roosevelt during the Great Depression, and they grew the money supply. And then fast forward to 1944, post-World War II, you had the Bretton Woods system, and that was re-entering gold-backed currency. And then 1971, we got off of it again, and this cycle continues. And so we've been in the fiat currency system ever since. But if you go back in history, it's clear that you need something like the gold standard to truly institute sound money, because politicians, they're corruptible. We all know that. And they will spend our dollars so that them and their cronies will get theirs. That's obvious. Now, what does this mean for your portfolio? Well, there's certainly a lot of correlation between gold and equities and inflation. They tend to all go up together at varying degrees. But gold tends to go up when there is a rise in government's debts. And you're seeing that right now. And that's a big reason why you're seeing gold and silver break out. On top of that, you obviously have central banks that continue to buy. Now, right now, 41% of gold demand is coming from investments in gold, the largest share of demand. Central banks are 17%, but rising. Technology is about 6%, because yes, gold does go into some parts of technology. And then jewelry demand is 38% of total demand. So there continues to be a strong case that there's underinvestment by the average person in exposure to gold. So that is likely to go up, as well as central banks, because there's not really a good alternative for central banks in a time of rising geopolitical uncertainty. We used to be, the U.S. Treasury used to be the cleanest, dirty shirt. That's no longer the case. And that's why they're diversifying into gold, because it became too dirty for them. And so that's why gold has a much better foundation in our monetary system, as well as your portfolio, than even Bitcoin. Now, you've got time for your question, so let's go answer one of those now from 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Luke and Justin. Love the show and would love your take on Lululemon, ticker LULU. It's been on my watch list for quite a while now, and the fundamentals seem to be getting to a good place, but the chart still just doesn't seem like it's found a bottom. So would love your overall take. Is this a good place to pick up for a long-term hold, or maybe start selling some puts, maybe in the 150 strike price range? Would just love your overall view and thoughts for the long term. Thanks again. I'll listen on the podcast. Bye-bye.
All right. Looking at Lululemon, a darling that peaked at over $500 per share not long ago. That was the end of 2023. So just 2 years ago. Now we're at $163 per share. So down roughly 70% from that high. And earnings, frankly, they're not down that much. $14.64 they earned last year. Then supposed to earn $12.85 this year and $12.67 next year. So down 12%, then 1%. And those estimates are coming down, so that's fair. But at $163, you're talking about a forward-looking multiple in the low teens, 12, 13 times. And they have a very clean balance sheet, very little debt. Free cash flow is $1.1 billion. Now, that's come down from a high of 1.7, but still, that's a free cash flow yield on $19 billion markup of about 6%, which is pretty good. Pretty good. Not dirt cheap, but pretty good. Enterprise value to EBITDA is around 6.8. And that is the lowest Lulu has traded in the last 10 years. The last time it was trading this cheap on that basis, this multiple, was actually 09, kind of the depths of the recession. So I certainly like that. Now, they are seeing more competition from online brands, as well as companies like, was it Fabletica? And there's a lot of other brands like that are encroaching on their space. And, you know, they're taking market share. Now, the positive here is that their operating margins are still pretty solid. They're not collapsing or anything like that. So I'm still a fan of the overall brand. And from a valuation perspective, I do think it is cheap. Now, can it get cheaper? Absolutely. But this is a time I would probably dip my toes in some shares and sell some puts at lower levels. Let me give you major support. Yeah, major support is going to be around 120. Now we're at 160. So certainly there's more downside potential. You know, it's trading at 10 times earnings. That's certainly possible. But you're in the zone. And I think from a long-term perspective, it is cheap. And I think they still have a great brand. So I would be picking up Lulu at this point. Thanks for the call. 8899 chart, 8899-242-4278 is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Now, let's take a look at global equities. And the first year of Trump's second presidency has brought a lot of surprises. But for a lot of investors, the biggest surprise has been the outperformance of the rest of the world, global equities versus U.S. equities, especially when you think, oh, equities are doing fine. Well, this is the widest margin that global equities have outperformed U.S. equities since 2009. And investors are, and this is continuing because investors still see the United States becoming dirtier compared to the rest of the world, right? We're having obviously more political issues and economic issues. We were post-COVID kind of the cleanest shirt out there because one, we did spend the most to stimulate our economy, but we did have the bellwethers of global growth, you know, the tech names. And that's certainly driven the market since the April lows, but now that has starting to come undone. And everyone's looking for cheaper alternatives to the indices. And then you have the dollar down. And so this makes a lot of sense. Now, it's mainly driven by what's going on in the Asian markets. That's the region that has outperformed the best. You have chip makers, foundries, semiconductor equipment manufacturers like TSMC, Samsung, Tokyo Electric, etc. In fact, the South Korean KOSPI is up 55% over the past year, the best performing among the major countries. And what's interesting is overall, valuations are not stretched. There's still room, I think, for them to go. The S&P 500 trades at 50% valuation premium to international peers, 50%. Now in Europe, things are looking a bit better. Inflation is contained. The ECB has lowered rates to 2%. And GDP growth has outperformed. And they're starting to spend again. The EU and Germany, they're spending on defense as well as infrastructure. That's had a nice tailwind for financials, defense stocks, as well as energy transition stocks as well. And then our tariffs have made our economy harder to deal with, harder to produce it. And so a lot of companies have switched their manufacturing over to Europe. And so I think this is only going to continue. The S&P TSX composite, Canada, is up 23% since the election. So even here in North America, the United States is not the best performing market. And Brazilian stocks are up 44% in dollar terms so far this year. So I wanted to highlight that because it's a trend that's been enduring throughout this year and it's not moving anywhere. Let's keep things moving and drop in another listener question now.
Hi, Luke and Justin. This is Dan from Walnut Creek. And I was listening to your show on the podcast where someone called in about purchasing stock for the Atlanta Braves. And I know the Green Bay Packers also are publicly traded, and there's probably other sports teams as well. I thought it'd be kind of cool to give this something like this to my boys. It's kind of like you said, a novelty type thing. But I'd like to give them something physical, like a certificate showing how many shares of the stock that they'd be receiving, but I'm not too sure if that's possible. Can you share your knowledge on this, please? Thanks very much. Bye.
This is a great question. Yes, you can get physical stock certificates, but you do have to pay a fee. So you need to talk to your broker. Depends on the broker. The fee can range anywhere from $50 to as much as $500. And not all stocks are eligible. So yeah, it's a process. You know, back in the day, you used to buy a stock, they automatically mailed it to you. You automatically got it. Now that's no longer the case. So it is possible. And to be frank, I do think it's still a novelty, unfortunately. When I say a novelty, I'm not talking, the certificate's obviously a novelty, but the publicly traded sports teams, you know, they're going to ebb and flow. Most of them, they're not paying dividends. And unfortunately, there's probably a lot of people that are like that, that just want to buy it for the novelty and say, hey, I own shares in the Atlanta Braves or the Green Bay Packers or whatever. And I don't expect them to be, well, let's say this. I expect long-term for them to be generally good investments, but they are going to be very volatile. Those are the type of names that have questionable near-term profitability, that don't pay dividends. Those are names that get sold when times are rougher. And so you have to be aware of that, and you have to be okay with that. And maybe having the certificate in a drawer, maybe on the wall, that's a perfect setup for not having to worry about that volatility. So that's something to consider as well. So keep it a novelty. Don't get too overexposed to it, no matter how much you love the team. Maybe you love the Atlanta Braves or the Green Bay Packers or whatever. It's just not an asset that's going to enhance a portfolio in any major way. Well, I think we are about ready for our final break. So whatever's on your mind, money related, I encourage you to give us a call. This is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal each and every weekday to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in right now at 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for Justin or Luke? You're the best person to ask it.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to, or should I sell it?
I would like to know more about a company which I've been tracking for some time.
Curious if you think it'd be better for me to let it go and spend money elsewhere.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
Well, first off, never take one man's opinion as gospel, including my own.
Is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
When you give a recommendation on your show for a buy-in, like an entry point to buy a stock, if I already own it, should I go ahead and be looking to sell it?
If this gets to 170 to 175 in that range, that's where I'd pick it up.
Awesome. Thank you, Justin. I appreciate it.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
This is Nelson from Minnesota. I've been listening to you at this podcast for a while now, and I finally getting the courage and giving you a call. I got a stock that would love to get your opinion. The stock is Avina Healthcare, ticker symbol A, B as in Victor, A, H. I'm looking for a small cap that I can get into within the healthcare space, more thinking about the baby boomer population retiring, needing healthcare at the home. I do see that next year's earnings are kind of outrageous, at least what they're forecasting. So just wanted to see your take on it and what's your advice, and is there a price point that I should be looking into getting in for this? Thanks a lot for the attention. Bye-bye.
This is an interesting one. Avina Healthcare, AVAH, they are a small cap, only about $1.8 billion market cap. And they provide home health hospice services to the elderly population. And it's about private duty nursing services. And with the boomer generation having a lot of the wealth and getting older, a lot of them can afford in-home nursing. And so I like the general trend here. Earnings this year is supposed to be up dramatically from 6 cents last year to 48 cents, and then 54 cents next year. So I'm liking the trends here. Let me take a look at its balance sheet. It does have a good amount of debt on its balance sheet. That worries me a bit. But free cash flow is solid and on the rise. So I'm going to give this one a thumbs up. A-V-A-H. A-V-A-H is the symbol. Thanks for the call. Now let's talk a little bit about housing as we close and whether the affordability crisis we know we're all in is going to get better. And as of July, it took 47% of median household income to buy a home, to buy a medium-priced home. Crazy, right? Nearly 50%. And the affordability crisis really accelerated after the pandemic, obviously. But what's interesting is that certain areas are getting more and less affordable. Even the expensive places, San Jose, San Francisco, Los Angeles, we're still in the top three metro areas when it comes to affordability. But they've actually gotten more affordable compared to a lot of other places over the last decade or so. That's what's interesting. So the affordability crisis that we had in the coasts and in major cities, it just kind of spread to the rest of the country. Places like Boise City, Idaho, Dallas, Texas, Cape Coral, Florida, Grand Rapids, Michigan, those areas got a lot more expensive. And we know that it's partly mortgage rates going up, but it's also things like construction materials costing more. And more natural disasters are causing homeownership rates to go up. The average home insurance premium in the United States rose 33% from 2022 to 2023. And overall, we're building fewer housing units than we need relative to the number of households over the past three decades because of land use restrictions, local zoning limitations, etc. And now you're starting to see the lack of labor because of the immigration policy. And so I think it's going to exacerbate the affordability crisis in many ways. And then obviously the tariffs are increasing building material costs. So it costs more to bring on new supply, so it's less profitable, so less incentive to actually do it. And then with more natural disasters, also the rebuild cost is higher. And so insurance prices are going up because of that as well. So you're getting that double whammy there. So what you're likely to see is going forward is that housing price growth is likely to continue to moderate and turn negative on a real basis. Now, it might go up still, but probably over the next 5 to 10 years in most markets, especially the expensive markets, it's going to start to act like what you've seen here in California, which is, yeah, prices are going up, but it's lower than inflation. And in certain markets that are very frothy, like you've seen recently with like Austin, Texas, there's places in Utah that are very frothy. Those are areas that probably will continue to see price declines. And so it's obviously depends on the market, depends on how economies evolve, but don't expect housing prices to have the same type of price growth over the next 10, 15 years if you've seen over the last 20 to 30 years. Now, I'm Justin Klein. Today's show made you think about your own financial picture in any way, your investments, taxes, your retirement plan, Roth conversions, Social Security strategy, your broader asset allocation, whatever it is, I encourage you to head over to investtalk.com and click on the portfolio review button and schedule a call with myself or Luke, and we can help bring clarity and confidence to your situation. Now, we thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes or Spotify, as well as our YouTube channel. Be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.